One more.
And we're holding on Zion Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, if one person says to the other, Hareni Alecha Cherem, I am a Cherem on you, which means, in other words, my Nechasim should be Cherem to you. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta that the word Cherem can actually have two different meanings. It can mean there's Cherme Koinim and there's Cherme Gavoya. There's Haramim where the din is you declare something Cherem and you have to give it to a Koin, and as soon as you give it to a Koin, then it's no longer, you can't do anything with it before you give it to the Kohen. You can't be poydered or anything, but as soon as you give it to the Kohen, then it doesn't have any kedusha. It becomes just the property of the Kohen. So we learned earlier in the Masechta that to declare something also by neder, if you're going to be matvisit, if you're going to be associating with something, it has to be with davar hanoder, with something that gains kedusha by you declaring it, hekdesh. So cherem kohenim are not like that. The fact is, you declare it a cherem, you have a mitzvah to give it to the kohen, but it's not really considered kodesh, per se, because we see that as soon as the kohen gets it, it becomes holy. On the other hand, then there's a kind of cherem, which is another way of saying that it's hekdesh, meaning that it goes to bedek abayis, it goes to the treasury of the vismikdash for the upkeep and the maintenance of the vismikdash. That would be regular hekdesh. That's dover han, that's the same as regular hekdesh. It's just a different lashon for it. That is a dover hanodu. And so if you say this thing is like hekdesh, then in fact it is also. We learned all the way back in the second parak that there's a difference in that regard between Yehuda and Golil. Because we said in Golil they weren't as familiar with Cherme Koyanim. They were further away in Pashtus because fewer Koyanim lived in the Galil. Because it's far away from the Beis Mikdash, and the Kohenim would have a long trip to make to get to the Beis Mikdash in time. So most of the Kohenim tended to live in Eretz Yehuda. So the people in the Galil, mostly when they said Cherem, by default, they would mean Cherem for Bedek Abayis. So we're talking about over here that the person is in the Galil, where therefore when he says Cherem, if he says cherem unspecified, then he means bedek habayis, and therefore it's a valid neder. That's what we said. We said back then that it depends where he lives. If he lives in Yehuda and says cherem, more likely he means cherem yekoyim. If he lives in Galil, then more likely he means cherem bedek habayis. Right.
No, you don't have to say specifically which cherem you mean. It depends where you live.
So what we had back then, we had the idea of Stam Nedorim Lahachmir, that when you have something that can be taken as a neder or is not a neder, then we go Lahachmir, unless we ask him, and he explains, and he says that he meant something else. So we had actually the mayor saying over there that it's not necessarily a matter of different places. It's a matter of whether he says stam or whether he explains. And Rabbi Yehuda had said that there's a difference between Yehuda and Golil in that regard. So now he says hareini alecha cherem. So if we're talking about in the Golil, so therefore that constitutes a neder, that his property is now also to the other guy as if it were hekdesh. So then, Hamudu Aser, well then, the one that he put under the nether is Aser. As opposed to the other way around. So Shimon says, Hareini Alecha Cherem, the result is that Reuven is also to have Hanah from him. We don't say the other way around. We don't say that Shimon is also to have Hanah from Reuven. So even though now if Shimon had said beferish, I am cherem to you, but you are not cherem to me, obviously you would be able to have enough, and then there's no chiddush in it. The Rosh points out, the Girsa in the Rosh is a little messed up, that you have notes over here on the side to correct it, But the Rosh seems to be saying that the chiddush of this part of the Mishnah is, even though he didn't say specifically, because he only said Hareini Alach Chayrim, therefore the other guy, therefore he remained mutter to have anah from the other guy. We don't say that automatically when he says that it should be reciprocal. Then there are certain things. We looked earlier in the Masechta that, for example, we said that if one person is mutter anah from the other, not only is he not allowed to lend to him, he's not allowed to borrow from him either, because we're concerned that one may lead to the other. But other than that, we don't say that.
Even though the guy only said it one way, like this.
That's the point, because he said it only one way. So in other words, the Rosh seems to be saying, if Shimon had said explicitly, I am chayram to you, but you are not chayram to me, of course there'd be no chiddush in it. But even if he just says Hareini Alach Chayram, we don't say that maybe we should make it that he should be also to have anah from Reuven as well. We don't say that. Similarly, if he says and vice versa, if Shimon were to say to Reuben, you are chayrim to me, and no, you're also, then it would be the other way around. Then Shimon, who makes the neder, would be also to have anah from Reuben, but not the other way. And if he says, I am chayrim to you, and you are chayrim to me, shnei masurin, then both of them are also. There's not really much chiddush in that part. That's more as an introduction to the next din of the Mishnah, which is, now both of them will be mutter to have hana from the things that belong to Oled Bavel, which we're going to go on to describe. So you have things that belong to the Jewish people collectively, things that were made Oled Bavel when they first came back to build the second Mishnah, and they created various kinds of things of infrastructure in Eretz Israel, as the Mishnah is going to go on to describe. So they made them available to all. They made them available to all the Jewish people. So in particular, Tosfos says they didn't give. They made it hefker to all Jews. They didn't make it. If they had made it that all Jews are partners in it, then partners would have the ability, as we learned previously in the parak, to make something also one on another. Same way as when the two of them, let's say, own a chotzer jointly. One of them, according to the Chachamim, against Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, is able to answer it to the other, and even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, in certain circumstances. But over here, the Oled Bavel, when they first built these things, they didn't intend them that they should belong to all the Jews. Instead, they said it's hefker for all Jews to use. So therefore, so none of them has the ability to answer it on the other, even though they're making a neder.
Without losing my
ear, that way? Maybe they had that in mind, or it doesn't matter. Vasurim b'davar shal oisair. However, these people, now that they made a neder, not to have anah from each other, they will be also in the things that belong jointly to the people of the city where they live. And the reason is, the Ran says, people from other cities don't have any ownership of these things. In fact, you have a concept in Halacha that the Zion Tuveyah Ir, the seven leading citizens of the city, which constitute like the Vada Kohol kind of, they can decide the Maimed Anshei Eir, in the presence of the other people of the city, that they need to sell this and this resource. The Gemara discusses it a lot in Masech and Megillah. So therefore, everybody in the city is considered partners. They have the Shiva Tovei Eir are elected or appointed or however exactly they get their positions to represent the city. And therefore, everybody is considered to be a partner in these things that belong to the city jointly. Like we're going to go on to say, for example, the Shul. The city shul, for example, is considered. All of them are partners in it. Well, therefore, so there's going to be a problem over there because one is answering the use of it to the other.
Well, you're answering the use of only his part, which is so much.
So first of all, let's define, what do we mean things that are from Oled Bavel? They're going Harabayas, for example, the Harabayas as a whole, Ha'azoris, and the Azoris, the courtyards within the Beis HaMikdash and the various other areas, all of those, again, we don't say that the Jewish people own them jointly, we say that they're hefter, nobody owns them, and they're available for everybody to use. So therefore, one of them is not able to answer it for the other. Another example would be a pit of water that's dug in the middle of the road. In various places, they dug pits in the ground to hold rainwater, so people will have drinking water for themselves and their animals, especially when they're oiler regel. So again, those things, nobody is able to answer them to each other because nobody owns them. What are the things that belong to that city? For example, the city square, you have sometimes, especially on Tanias Tzibur, they would go out and daven over there. v'amerchatz, and a bathhouse in the city. So we learned before, you can have a case where Shimon owns a bathhouse himself and rents it out to somebody, but here we're talking about a bathhouse that's owned by the city as a whole. So again, everybody has a portion of it. Or Beis HaKnesses and a shul, v'ateva, and the teva. The Ram defines the teva as the bima, where they place the Sefer Torah on. Tosfos and the Rosh explain that it means the Arim Kodesh, or other shelves where they place Sfarim. Sfarim and the Sfarim. It can mean the Sefer Torah, it can mean other Sfarim that they learn from. So all of those things belong to everybody jointly. V'hakosev chelke l'nasi, and somebody who writes a document that his portion belongs to the nasi. Which means, the Gemara is going to explain, those last words mean that is how we fix up the situation. If you have this case where Reuven and Shimon have made a neder of Hana, one from the other, and now neither of them is able to use the shul or the bima, etc. So what they do is, each one of them can write a document saying that I'm giving my portion of, that I'm giving my share of this shul to the nasi. Well, then in that case, it doesn't belong to him anymore. Therefore, they're both able to use it. So the Ran makes a point. Now, our Mishnah would seem to be only according to the Chachamim. First of all, by the way, there are Rishonim who take out the word Sfarim because they say, don't you have the issue of Mitzvah Slav Lahanis? The learning from the Sfarim, the learning from the Torah, the learning from other Sfarim is not considered the kind of Hana that would be also to a Murder Hana, Mitzvah Slav Lahanis Nitnu. So therefore, what's the problem? You should be able to, you don't need to do anything as far as the Sfarim. So in fact, there are Rishonim who take out the word Sfarim over here. On the other hand, there are Rishonim, Rabbi Avraham ben Ahar says, for example, he says that actually the mitzvah of learning Torah is an exception to the rule of mitzvah slav lahanis nitnu, because you're meant to have hana from learning Torah. You're meant to understand it with your brain and have hana that you're understanding the Eibishter's words. So therefore, we would say that that's a hana from the mitzvah. So therefore, Sfarim are validly mentioned over here. So now the Ran says our Mishnah would seem is only according to the Chachamim, because we learned earlier. We learned at the beginning of the Perek, we said that there's a distinction within a chotzer whether yesh badin chaluk or ein badin chaluk. Is it something that you can divide it up and still be able to speak of a chotzer once it's divided? Is it large enough that each one can get its 4x4 amos in his driveway and be able to have something that can function as a chotzer or not? And we said that if it is large enough for that, even Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov would agree that they have to split it up. Rather than each one using the chotzer and relying on that. On the other hand, when there was no din chalukah, when it's impossible to split it up because each one needs it's not large enough to split up, then we said Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov allows them both to use it. Well, it may be true that each one needs only a small part of the shul, but in a certain sense, not really. You can't really divide up the shul. You can't start putting down in the shul over there saying markers and saying you're allowed to use only this part, I'm allowed to use only this part. You certainly can't say that, for example, as far as the Aron Kodesh or the Bima or the Sfarim or what have you. So that would be the equivalent of Ein Badin Chalukah, and yet our Mishnah is saying that they're also. So that would seem to be like the Chachamim, not like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, the Ran points out, though, that becomes a question then on the Ramban. On the one hand, we said before the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, when you have a small chotzer, both of them are allowed to use it, each in their turn. And on the other hand, the Ramban also paskins the halacha, like our Stam Mishnah, that says that they're also to use the shul unless they write it away to the Nasi. So what's going on over here? So, in fact, he says the Ramban also asks the same question on the Ramban. So what does the Ramban hold on that? So there are a couple of answers. The Lechem Mishnah on the Ramban gives the answer that we discussed at the beginning of the Perek. We had the whole long discussion about the basis of the Machloikas of the Chum and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov about Breira. So the Ramban may have, the Ramban may hold according to one of those opinions that we discussed as far as Breira, and therefore say that, in that case, we would say that each of them is allowed to use the chotzer. But here, where you have the here, 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 uh, here we would say that wouldn't, here we would say those considerations don't necessarily apply. Especially because you have the option of giving it away to the Nasi. You have the option of, in fact, actually, so the Merkevus HaMishnah, they discuss this with Lacha Mishnah and says it seems like a bit of a doichek, and he answers, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov would agree in this case, because you have the option of writing the document, giving your portion to the Nasi, then go ahead and do that. With a chotzer in the middle of nowhere, nobody's going to do that, because why would the Nasi have any interest in owning a chotzer in some little town? But a shul, he might, your shul, conceivably, he might have an interest in actually owning this, and then saying, on that basis, you, Reuven and Shimon, who aren't getting along, are allowed to use it, so therefore you have more of an ability to do that. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Echad Kosev Nasi VeEchad Kosev LaHadyet. Rabbi Yehuda says actually when we talk about writing out a document to give it to the Nasi, it doesn't really matter whether we're talking about the Nasi or any other person. Ma Ben Kosev LaNasi LaKosev LaHadyet. So what would be the difference? Why are we speaking of giving it to the Nasi when you could just as well give it to a Hadyet, some third party? The difference is Shah Kosev LaNasi Ein Tzarech LaZakos. If you're writing a document giving it to the Nasi, you don't need to be mezakeh to him through somebody else. As soon as you write Shtar Matana, my portion in the shul belongs to the Nasi, then the Nasi is koina it on his own. Because the Ram says the Nasi's koyach is powerful, and therefore he's able to be koina. He's able to be koina even without somebody being even without somebody acquiring it on his behalf. The Rosh says a similar lashon, because of the kavod of the Nasi, they made a takana that he should be able to acquire such a thing without a kinyan, just with the shtar matana being written out. On the other hand, if you're giving it to a hedyet, then you need to be mezakeh to him. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's not that you can't use a third party for that purpose and be mezakeh to him, but you would have an extra step in that regard. You'd have to be makneh to him through somebody else. It wouldn't just be enough to write out a document. Whereas with the Nasi, all you need to do is write out a document. What? Yeah, sort of like an eruch chaser, an Eretz HaShulim, you don't write on that. Oh, right. With an Eretz HaShulim, it's an example when you're mezakeh to somebody else, right. B'cham say no, actually, there's no such takana. Whether it's the Nasi or whether it's anybody else, you are going to have to be mezakeh. Lo dibra b'Nasi ala b'hoiva. The reason why the Mishnah, the reason why the Uli Yochachamim said about Kosev Chalkei LaNasi, why they mentioned the Nasi, is because that's a typical example. Usually, instead, you're gonna use the Nasi for that purpose rather than a third party, because after all, you always have the problem that third party himself may decide, you know what, what if that person tomorrow makes a neder and asks it to me, and then I have the same problem all over again. So you do the Nasi, he's living over there in Yerushalayim or Yavne, wherever the Nasiim lived at any given time, and he's not going to worry about, he's not going to have any, he's not going to think to himself, he's not going to go and ask his Hana to me, a Yid who lives in such and such a place. He has nothing against me to do that. He's got bigger things to do, yeah. The Nasi is also almost like the Rebbe of the Jewish people, you know, he's not going to have some personal vendetta against somebody like that, yeah. Continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein Anshei Golil Tzrichim Lichtov. Rabbi Yehuda says the people of the Golil, the people in the north of Eretz Yisrael, if such a situation happens, Ein Tzrichim Lazakis, Ein Anshei Golil Tzrichim Lichtov, they don't have to write out anything. If you have a case like that in the Golah, where Reuven and Shimon have made a neder to ask the Hana from one another, from each other on themselves, they won't have to write out anything. Automatically, they will still be able to use their local shul and the various things in the shul, because their ancestors already wrote it out on their behalf, meaning, as the Gemara is going to say, they're back. In earlier times in the Golil, people realized that people in the Golil are prone to this kind of thing, to making the Dorim and in a fit of anger like that, and therefore to begin with, they made the arrangement that it all belongs to the Nos. So as we'll see in the Gemara. So therefore, it already belongs to the Nasi, the Shul, and the Sifrei Torah, and all of that. And therefore, they don't have the ability to ask it on one another. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you don't need to actually write out anything because it's already been done for you by your ancestors. So the Gemara asks, Amayli.
Something was built for everybody could be automatically owned by one person.
Yeah, you could have. In other words, yeah, that's exactly it. You actually have a din in Masechta Megillah, an interesting point, as far as who, about who owns a shul anyway. When it's in a village, where the only people who generally use that shul are going to be the people of the village, then you can talk about that belongs to them exclusively. Therefore, like we said, the Shiva Tuvah Ya'ir, for example, would have the right to sell it. On the other hand, the Gemara in Megillah tells us that when you have a shul, that's when you have a shul in a big city where people come from other places as well to daven in it, they have a share in that shul as well. So nobody, for example, has the right. So it's not so simple to go and sell that shul because it's not just the people of your village that you have to check with. You would have to check with all Jews all over the world. But yes, you could conceivably have, even in a big city, you could have a shul that belongs to one person. So over here, what we're saying is that these people, they write out a document that says that their share of the shul belongs to the Nasi. Remember what they're saying? In the Galil, to begin with, when they built their shuls and stocked them with Sifrei Torah and Urn Kodesh and so on and so forth, they had in mind to begin with that we're putting them under the authority, under the ownership of the Nasi, precisely so that people can't ask for them on each other when they make Midari. So the Gemara asks, am I mitzar? In the case where, we went through the list of things that one of them is going to be, that each of them is going to be also in the shul. And then he said, b'chosev chelkei l'nasi, when he writes out a document saying that my portion belongs to the Nasi. Well, then why should it be also? If it belongs to the Nasi, he didn't make a neder not to have enough from the Nasi. What's the problem? Rav Shecha says, "Hachi ketani." So Rav Shecha says, "You're right. What the Mishnah means is, umata kanosan. How do you fix up the situation when Reuven and Shimon have made a neder to ask their hana one to the other? Yichtuvu chelkan l'nasi. Then they should write out their portions that they belong to the Nasi, and now they will be able to use them because now it doesn't belong to Reuven and it doesn't belong to Shimon anymore.
It wasn't done only later on.
So it wasn't. So we're talking about before we get to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that was already done in the Gol. Even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that in other parts of Eretz Yisrael, in other parts of the world, that wouldn't necessarily apply because they didn't do it. They didn't do it in advance, so therefore you'd have to do it. Rabbi Yehuda, in fact, is saying you don't even need to write it to the Nasi. You can write it to somebody else as well. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the only difference is the advantage of doing it to the Nasi is you don't have to make a kinyan as well. So that's what the Mishnah means. When it says v'akosav chokei l'nasi, it doesn't mean that they have to. It doesn't mean that if he writes his portion out to the Nasi, then you still have a problem. Just the opposite. Those words are telling us how to correct the situation, what the best way is to fix up the situation to make it that now they'll be able to have enough. And the Gemara quotes over here, and this is from the Mishnah, it seems to be repetitive because just quoting the words of the Mishnah again. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Echad Kosev B'Nasi V'Echad Kosev B'Hadya. That Rabbi Yehuda said it doesn't make a difference whether you write to the Nasi or to a regular person. Uma ben Kosev B'Nasi V'Kosev B'Hadya. What's the difference between them? Hakosev B'Nasi in Tzorech L'Zakas. V'Hakosev B'Hadya Tzorech L'Zakas. That if you're writing that to a Hadya, you need to be Mezakeh. B'Cham Echad Zev Echad Zev Tzorech L'Zakas. L'Duba B'Nasi Ela B'Hoiva. B'Cham only mentioned the Nasi because it's the most common thing to do. So it seems that those few lines don't belong in the Gemara. It seems that somebody copied them out again by mistake, not realizing that he's just repeating what it says in the Mishnah. Okay. We said Rabbi Yehuda ain't answered Golil Tzrichim Mezakis. We said Rabbi Yehuda says the people in the Golil don't need to be Mezakah, the portion in the shul, to the Nasi, because Shufrakosva was saying Al Yadin, because their ancestors already wrote it on their behalf. So what it means is, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Anshe Golil come to run it for you. These people in the Golil were easily angered. They would easily get angry and provoked at each other. So they would make a neder of Hana, one from the other. And by the way, the Ritva brings from this, you see from this, therefore, that when a person makes a neder in a fit of anger, now we learned earlier in the Masechta about Nidrei Oynesin, when a person makes a neder in a state of oynes, for example, he's being forced to make a neder by the mafia or whatever, then we say the neder is not really chal, but now when a person is angry and makes a neder in the heat of anger, that's not considered an oynes, and the neder is in fact chal. So they would make such an adonim. Omdu Rav is saying because of Chalkei and Manasi, so their ancestors, wrote out a document that they made everybody in the city write out a document that their portions in the shul and in other public infrastructure belongs to the Nasi, and that way they can never ask for it on each other. And in fact, also, actually, that point actually about a neder in anger is not from the Ritzvah. It's from various Achronim talk about it, but the Ritzvah does make a point that it would apply even not only to things that the Avisehem themselves built, it would even apply to things that existed already before Avisehem came along. They also have the ability to write those out to the Nasi and to say that those belong to the Nasi and you have no more power to deny them to each other. We don't say because they already existed before them, they don't have rights over them. No, they still have such rights to be able to do that. So in other words, even if the shul was built, let's say, 100 years before Avisehem came up with this takana, it would still work. And they can still write it out that belongs to the Nasi from now on. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamudu Haname Chaveroi.
If it doesn't change it over generations, it doesn't matter. Just going
through. Once they said it belongs to the Nasi, and that's it. Unless the Nasi wants to give it back to them, but why would he? He understands that they did it for the Takana. Yes. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamudu Haname Chaveroi Ve'imam Ayoichal. Now, this first part of the Mishnah we learned earlier in the previous parak, we're only saying it as by way of introduction to the next part of the Mishnah. So, if Reuven is also to have Anah from Shimon, so Ve'imam Ayoichal, he doesn't have what to eat, Noisnil Achal, the Shematana. So we learned that Reuven, Shimon can give the food away to somebody else as a present, Ba'lo Mutterba, and then Reuven is allowed to eat it. However, now the Mishnah goes on to say with a story that seems to contradict that. We're going to explain in the Gemara. Usually when the Mishnah brings a story, it's usually to support what we just said, not to contradict it. So the Gemara is going to explain that's one of these Chasuri Machsara things. Maisa be'echa be'beis Chorin. So it happens with somebody in Beis Chorin, a city in the northwest of Yerushalayim, in the center of Eretz Yisrael. His father was also to have anah from him. Meanwhile, the son from whom the father was also to have anah was marrying off his own son. So to use the names that we gave the other day when we started discussing this case, so Reuven is also to have anah from his father Yaakov. Reuven has made a neder that his father Yaakov is also to have anah from him. But now Reuven is marrying off his son Chanoich, and he would like to be able to have his father Yaakov the Zeda by the way. So he goes over to somebody else, unrelated, and he tells him Chotzer Asud and Asunin Hinan Lachanecha. I'm giving you the Chotzer and I'm giving you the meal. Ela Kadesh Yavei Abba, and it's just for the purpose that my father should be able to come with Yechelimana Besoda and be able to eat with us at the Soda. So the other guy says, Im shali heim, if they're mine, harehem mekudosh l'shamayim, then I want to declare them hekdesh to Hashem. Now, he was really doing that in order to test and see, is this really considered a matana? Are you Reuven, genuinely giving it as a matana, or are you only doing it as an evasion to get around the nether? Reuven says, Nasati l'chaz shalitship, shatatishim l'shamayim. What do you think? I gave you my things in order that, I gave you my things in order that you should give them away as hefesh. The Ran points out, it's not normal that a person would make a whole suda for his son's wedding and then give it away to somebody else. So don't you realize I didn't give it to you for that? So the other guy says, I understand what's going on over here. Nasata li eschocha, yeah, you know why you gave me your things, the chotzer and the soda. Ela shetei atav avicha uchon v'shoysin v'tzratzin zelazeh. You want that you and your father are going to be sitting and eating and drinking and getting along with one another. But the fact is you haven't been matir your nether and you're also to do that. And the Avera is going to be hanging on my head because I'm the one who made it possible for that Isur to take place. I was the one who was over. I'm lifting the Iver. I was the one who made it possible for you to do an Isur. You want to have your father by your wedding? No. Go be Matu Nedu. Don't try to evade it and put it on my head. So Amru Chachamim, so the Chacham said he has a point. Kol Matona She'ena She'imikdisha Teimu Kodeshes. Any Matona. Any present which is given, it's given in such a way that if he were to make it hekdesh. So the gifts that we have over here is shemekdesha tehei makudesha, that it's not that if he wants to make it hektish, it should be hektish. The Ran has a different girsa, which is kol matana shemukdisha einam ukdeshes, that any matana, that if he that it's not the case that if that it's not the case that if he makes it hektish, it won't be hektish. Einam matana, then it won't be a matana. In other words, a matana has to be where you're capable of declaring it hektish. So the Ran explains now, what about matana al manas lahasir? So every sukkah we come up against the, we come up on the issue of matana al manas lahasir. We give our lulav and esrid as a present to the other person, and he has to give it back in order for the matana to be chal. Well, the difference is, over there, so actually what it is, you're saying, at the time when you have this matana, it fully belongs to you. You can do whatever you want with it. You could even be makdish it. But you have a responsibility to return it to me in a way that I can use it. So, I mean, you want to declare it hektish, go ahead. But then you have a responsibility to buy it back from hektish so that I have it again. So, therefore, such a thing would be considered a matana. Over here, though, with matnas beis chordin, he's not even having that in mind. He's only having in mind only that the meal should be called, that it's Pliny's meal rather than Ruben's meal. So therefore, the Ran says, thus the Lashon, kol matona she'ena, she'enikdisha, ena makudesh eschola. Now, the Mishnah could have just said, very simple, any matona, that if you're makdish, it's not makudesh, is not a matona. What we mean is, when you have a matona, which is clearly a harama like this, where it's clearly a harama, and you're saying that you have no right to be makdish it, so that would not be considered a matana. Because that's in effect what happened over here. Because when Reuven gives it to this other fellow, and he says, I want to give it as hektish, and Reuven tells him, you have no right to do that, so that makes it clear to begin with that it was a matana, that it was just meant as a harama, just meant as a subterfuge, as a tricky way of getting around the neder, rather than a matana. Manas perhaps it would be different, because then you're actually giving full rights to it over full rights over it to the other person. You're just saying there's a condition that you have to return it to me in a usable state.
So how true is that?
So if he had said, I'm giving you this as matana manas lahasir, it would work. But you can't do that. Matana manas lahasir, what do you mean? The food is going to be eaten. There's no lahasir.
Yeah, but I mean...
We're going to discuss in the Gemara. We're going to actually have two possibilities of... Is there a way that he could have said it differently?
Yeah, even some little house, whatever's left over, dessert, whatever.
Yeah, but no, that's not the point. The point is, whatever would be eaten is not going to be returned.
He doesn't care. He wants everyone to eat.
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is that he needs to be able to give it away as a matana, where it'll actually, that's the point. You have to have, then if the other guy has full rights over it, then he has the right to be makdish it as well. And we're saying that the Reuven is telling him, no, you can't be makdish it. So then it's clear that it's only a haram.
No, also, isn't that the same thing?
No, so that's the thing. That's what the Ran is explaining. Matana manas lahasu is, you can do whatever you want with it. You want to be makdish it, go right ahead. You have to buy it back from hektish then. And you have to make sure that it gets back to me intact. Here with the Suda, you can't say that. It's not going to get back to him intact anyhow. It's going to be eaten.
It can be just money, it can be something else.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you, if you say you buy it back, you could buy other food.
No. No, it has to be the same thing. If I give you my lulav and esrog, matana manas lahasir, and the esrog becomes possible, and you say I'll get you a different esrog, still doesn't work. You still haven't been master of me, my esrog in a usable state. So that's what it is. In other words, so the result is it's not actually a matana. Tosfos says something similar, but they say it, they just in different osias, they say, as long until you return, even up to the time you return it, with a matana manas lahasir, it is a full-fledged matana. You could be makne to somebody else. Also, you have, for example, a story in Masechta Sukkah, where Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua and a couple of the other Chachamim are on a boat during Sukkot, and they only have one lulav and esrog between them, Rabbi Gamliel's lulav and esrog. So what happens? Rabbi Gamliel gives it as a present to Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua in turn gives it to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva gives it to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and then it makes its way back to Rabbi Gamliel. Each one of them had full right during the time when he owns it to actually be makneh to somebody else. Here, when Reuven is being machne the suda to this other person, that other person doesn't have the right to be machne to somebody else. Reuven never gave him such rights to do that. Therefore, it's not a full matana. Does he make it clear that he's doing it only in order that his father should be able to come eat by the meal?
$1,000.
Right. So therefore, this is what we learned the other day. We called this ma'as beis choren, that we said there are cases where the Chachamim are concerned that when you're giving something as a matana, you're only doing it as a trick like this, rather than sincerely meaning it as a matana. That's, we had the discussion the other day, for example, when we had the matter of him declaring it hefter. As he sincerely declaring it hefter, it was only an example of this ma'as beis choren. So that became known in halacha as the case of the present of beis choren, because that's where the story took place.
So in other words, it wouldn't be like a bunch of speak among his boats. When you matter something, when you give something to someone else, someone else has to, you're allowed to give to someone else in between.
Yeah. So for example, if I give you my rule of an esrei, my tana manas lahatzir, yes, you would be, it has to be that I'm giving it to you as a full matana, otherwise you're not yotze. And yes, you have the right to then turn around and give it to somebody else, and the somebody else to somebody else, as long as eventually it makes it back to me. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Maisa Lister, is the Mishnah bringing a Maisa to contradict what it said before? We just said that he can give it as a matana and the other person can eat, and here you're saying you can't give it as a matana. The answer is Chasuri Mechser, the Mishnah is missing words. The Mishnah means to say, if at the end we see clearly what he intended at the beginning, that it's clear that he intended the matana only for the purpose of evading the neder, also then it would be also, and it would happen also, in fact, in Beis Choren like that, where this whole story with this person, where they're to have a sofer, mechiyach hatzchilasei, that would be an example of mechiyach sofer hatzchilasei, where the end, when Reuven says, I never gave it to you to declare it hektish, or to give it to somebody else, or whatever, makes it very clear that he gave it only for the purpose of evading the neder, and therefore that's no good.
So even if he gave it to a friend, you know, he wouldn't be mad, he wouldn't want to give it away to Hektish.
Right, doesn't matter, though. The fact is, the other friend should have the right to give it to Hektish, and if he doesn't have that right, then... So Omar Rava, lo shonu elo de omale vihinam lefanecha. Lo shonu elo de omale vihinam lefanecha, elo kadeshi yavi abba. Now, in the Mishnah, when Reuven gave the Suda and the Chotzer away, he explicitly says, I'm giving it to you only for the purpose that my father should be able to come to the Suda. What if he doesn't say that? So now Rava says, only if he actually says that, the favor. But if he says, I'm giving it to you and it'll be in front of you, that my father should eat. So he's not making it as a tnai. He's not saying, I'm giving it to you only for the purpose that my father should come. He's saying, I'm giving it to you, and my father will then be able to come. Then we can say, me dies for Udamale, then it would mean, look, you're the balabos of the Suda now. You can decide to invite my father if you want. So he's hinting to him, kind of, that he'd like his father to be invited, but he's not actually saying that the Matana is predicated on him doing that. So therefore, Rava says that would be fine. That means that he's telling him that that's midaitcha, it's up to you whether to invite my father, and therefore that would be mutter. Then it would be a full-fledged matona. The pashtus, it would mean that he could give it to Hektish, but more to the point is also, he's leaving it up to the other person whether to actually invite the father. The Ran compares this to a case that we find in a different Gemara. We had it in Beitzas, we had it about a year ago, where a person says, give 400 zuz to Pliny, and he should marry my daughter, where the two things are not dependent one on the other. The 400 zuz he gets, if he wants to marry the daughter, good, and if not, then not. Otherwise, if the person had phrased it, give him 400 zuz if he marries my daughter, then it would be a tznach. But like this, it's two independent statements. So the same thing over here, he's saying, this suda is yours. This Suda is yours. Invite my father, then those are two separate things. I mean, the Suda belongs to him outright, and if he wants to invite the father, that's up to him. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Lishna Hrina Aminla. On the other hand, there's a second Lashon that they say, Omar Rava, Loi Tema Taima Do Omale Vehinan Lafanacha Udasir. Don't think that the reason in our Mishnah is only when he explicitly says, that it's in front of you in order that my father should come. Only then does it also. Abel amalei hein lefanecha sheyavi abel v'yilchom mutter. But that if you were to say it's given to you and I'd like that my father would come and eat, that then it should be mutter. El afilu amalei hein lefanecha yavi abel v'yilchom. No, according to the second lashon, Rava says, even if he says it's there in front of you, it's there for you at your disposal, yavi abel v'yilchom, my father should come and eat. Also, on the second lashon, it would even be also in that case. My time is so dosim, because the Suda makes it very clear that he's not meaning to give it as a matana gemara. with Anan Sani, it's very obvious to us, nobody makes a whole sudah for his son's wedding and gives it away to somebody else. So therefore, we can very clearly see that when he's saying that my father should come, he means it as a tnai gom. So therefore, it would remain osir, even though he didn't tie the two things together, because we can see very clearly the very fact that he made the suda for his son, then would mean therefore that he's not meaning sincerely to give it away.
But even the Russian who they did that,
so even
that
the right, that's the point. Robert is saying neither of those Lashonis work.
Right.
Now, the Lechem Mishnah learns that the Ran at least would hold that that would apply only if he made the wedding party for his son. Because the Ran uses the expression, Anan Sadi, a person that makes a Suda for his son's wedding and then give it away, implying, according to the Ran, if it was, let's say, his brother's wedding, then maybe it would work. On the other hand, the Lechem Mishnah says the Rambam holds that it's across the board. Any Suda, and the Rambam actually says explicitly, any Suda, Gdoilo Bachashova, any big, important Suda, then we say that if he's giving it away, he's not giving it away sincerely, it's only Matna Space Chorim. The Ran also brings that between a machlokus between the Rashba and the Rambam. What about if he says it later on? What if he gives it to him outright and later on he says, "I'd like you to invite my father"? Then the Rashba says that would be fine. On the other hand, the Rambam says that even afterwards it would still retroactively show that the matana was no good. Okay, the Gemara tells a case. Ahu gavra dehavile bara. There was a man who had a son. This case is going to bear on our mission. So there was a man who had a son, Dahaba Shomit Kifi de Kitna. This son was grabbing kifi of flax. So what does that mean? There's a few explanations. The Ran says means the son was stealing bundles of flax from people. The Mefarish, printed under Rashi's name, gives that as a first explanation. A second explanation, it means that he wasn't learning Torah, Shomit, he was evading learning Torah, and instead he was busying himself with doing business with bundles of flax. And the father wasn't happy with that because he wanted his son to learn Torah. The Rosh explains that it means that he was stealing, he says that Shomit does also mean stealing. It means that he was stealing certain women's jewelry, which is kippi, is a kind of women's jewelry that were made out of flax. Jewelry or ornaments or whatever that were made out of flax. And Tosfos says that he was grabbing them and wounding them. So whatever the case, basically the kid was a juvenile delinquent. So the father said that his nechasim should be also to his son. And he even used the expression, b'chayev of a moisa, that even after he dies, his son shouldn't be able to yarsh him. So they said to the father, what are you going to do if your grandson, if this son is going to end up getting married, if he has a son who's a Talmud Chacham, then what are you going to do? Wouldn't you want that your Nechasim should go to such a grandson? So he says, fine, let this son of mine yaushin and then yaushin the property. But only for the purpose for iavoi ba'brit suvim rabbanon. If my grandson ends up being a talmid chacham liknei, then he should be the one who's koyneh. Now the Ran explains that we learned previously that when a father says that my son and chosim are also to my son, so we said the son doesn't yaushin him, but we said actually the son is able to give the nechosim away to somebody else. We said a bal choy, for example, can take it or whatever. So why would it be different? Over here? So the Ran explains that actually what happened was this father in the story had more than one son. This juvenile delinquent of a son was not his only son. He had other sons as well. So when the father said that this son is also to have enough for me, people figured that means that when he dies, he wants all of his nechasim to go to his other son, the son who's a good normal person, not to this one. So now they tell him, after all, why shouldn't your son have a share in the nechasim? He might have a son who's a talmid chacham. So he says, fine, you're right, then I want to give half of it to him, but for the purpose of that if his son is a Talmud Chacham, then he should acquire that half, and if not, then I want it retroactively to go to my other son who has been acting properly all this time. So my, so then what's the din? Would the grandson in fact inherit his father's portion of the nechasim or not? So the Chacham Pumpadissa said, "Kni amunas lahatnisu." This is an example of telling somebody, be koinet in order to be maknet to somebody else. You yourself don't have the right to use the nechasim, but you have the right only to give it to somebody else. So again, the Ran says, this is not an example of maton amunas lahatnisu. Maton amunas lahatnisu, you have full rights to use the thing during the time that it belongs to you. Here we're saying that I'm only being machnet to you, not that you should be have hanasmin at all, but only that you should bequeath it to your son if he's a tzurvim and abanon. So the chacham, the pumbedisa said, b'chol kniya manas lahaknis loytoni. So therefore, that's not a valid kinyan. Therefore, it wouldn't actually work. There's no kinyan. There's no kinyan for the grandson to actually be koyin of the nechos. Rav Nachman says no. As a matter of fact, he is koyin. And Rav Nachman says, I'll prove it. Das sudra kni amunas lahaknisu. After all, consider the case of a kinyan sudra. You go say to the Rav, look for mechiras chometz. The way that kinyan sudra works is, you're selling the Rav your chometz. Minag beis harab is a little different, that you're not actually selling the Rav the chometz, but whatever, minag beis harab is that you do. In the velt they often have, that you're not actually selling the Rav your chometz, you're only making him a mursha, you're making him, that you're giving him authority to sell your chometz. In our minag, you are in fact actually selling the Rav your chometz, and then he turns around and sells it to the goy. So now, you go, you do a kinyan sudr, so what happens? The Rav who is acquiring the chometz from you gives you his gartel or his handkerchief or whatever. You pick it up. You are koyin it. And that way we have a kinyan chalifin. You're being koyin from him, his gartel, and in return, he's being koyin from you, your chometz. Now, Rav Nachman points out, kni amunas lahaknisu. Now, what happens when the Rav gives you the sudr? He's not giving it to you to keep. He's giving it to you in order to be machna right back to him. Because that's what you're going to do at the end of the procedure, and we still see that that's a valid kinyan. Well, by the same token, then, so over here, the father is saying that the son, the no goodnik son, should inherit the property only for the purpose of giving it to somebody else, his future son, who will be a talmid chacham. Why shouldn't it work? Exactly. By the way, the ritual points out, if the son had already been born, then the grandfather would, then it wouldn't be so complicated. Then the grandfather can already be mezakah to him right there. But the din is, I'm a zakah la'uber la'ikana. You can't be mezakah to somebody who wasn't born yet. So therefore, the only way to do it is through the son. So Rav Nachman says it would work. But Rav Ashi says that's not a valid proof. First of all, in the case of a Kenyan Sudr, who says that if a person keeps the Sudr, it wouldn't be a valid Kenyan? So suppose, for example, you're doing the Chiras Chometz. The Rav gives you his Gartel. You do Kenyan Sudr, and you sell him your Chometz, and then you walk out of there with the Gartel. Does the Rav have the ability to get his Gartel back? Not necessarily. The Kenyan is still a valid Kenyan. Normally, it's expected that you're going to return it, that you're going to return it to the Rav, but you're not actually required to up your offer. So in that case, it's considered Kenyan Gomer. Whereas over here, he's making it clear that it's only for the purpose of being marked to somebody else. The Oid, Sudra, and also another point is, even if you're going to say, also let's consider, says Rav Ashi, Sudra, Kni Amunas Lahaknos, it's true, fine. Even if you're going to argue Kenyan Sudra is Amunas Lahaknos, that there is an implicit deal that you're going to return the Sudra to the Rav. Fine. But Ukni min Hashta, but you also have that the Kenyan is meant to take effect right now. As soon as you do the Kenyan Sudra, then the Kenyan is taking effect right there on the spot. But when you're talking about these nechosin of this guy, this father who wants to deal with his nechosin, la'emasaikni, when is the son going to be koina? L'chihab ba'breit suvim rabbanon. Only when his son grows up and becomes a talmid chacham. Well, l'chihab, at that point, hodr sudr l'mari. By that time, the sudr has long since been returned to the owner. In other words, there's no kinyan that takes place at that time. So even if you're going to argue, says Rav Ashi, that by a kinyan sudr, you do say you're returning it right away, and you're required of the halacha to return it right away, and the kinyan is chal, fine, but the kinyan is taking place at that moment anyway. When you're, in this case of a year, the kinyan is only going to take place many years later. There's no kinyan taking place at that point. So how could it be valid? So in fact, the Ran points out, we learned in Ksubas, we had a case, for example, where Reuven says to Shimon, do mashicha on this cow, but the kinyan will take effect only 30 days from now. So we said, if 30 days from now, the animal is not in his rishus, if it's out in the meadow, then he's not kohen. The difference is, so therefore, Rav Nachman himself knows that there's such a thing, that delayed kinyan is not a valid kinyan. Why is he thinking over here that's good, and Rav Ashi has to slug him up? So the Ran explains, Rav Nachman would have thought to make a distinction between over there, you explicitly said that you're only kohen 30 days from now. Here he's not explicitly saying that you're only kohen when my son becomes a Talmid Chacham. It's implicit in the thing. He wants to give it to him for the purpose that his son will eventually be a Talmid Chacham and will get the Nechasim, but he doesn't say in so many words, you're kohen it only when my son becomes a Talmid Chacham, and then you'll be mocking it to him. So therefore, Rav Nachman figured that there's a distinction. Rav Ashi is saying there's no distinction. One thing is also, the Ran points out, if we were talking about a Kenyan shtar, then that would be different. The shtar itself continues to exist 30 days or however long later. So if a shtar for a Kenyan is written out, then it can take effect even when no new act of Kenyan is done later. For example, the Ram says, a man is Makadish, a woman with a shtar. He says, Harayat Makudeshusli, La'achal Shloshim Yod, if after 30 days, the shtar is still in existence, then the Kiddushin takes effect at that point. You don't need a separate Kenyan for that. Whereas, for example, if you were to give her money and say, Harayat Makudeshusli, La'achal Lamad Yoyim, then the din would be, she's only Makudish, only if the money still exists 30 days from now. Also, now, that's, he says, the Rashba says that there would be a difference between Kinyan Shtar and other kinds of Kinyanim. The Ran himself disagrees that no, in our case of a year, even a Shtar wouldn't work, because we have the concept, Ein Shtar La'achamisa. The Shtar can't take effect after he's dead. It can only take effect while he's still alive. A Matnas Shchidmer, the mechanism by which it works, is it takes effect the moment before he dies. Here, the whole point is he doesn't want it to take effect, and he wants to take effect only many years later when his grandson becomes a Talmid Chacham. Therefore, even a shtar is not going to work.
Yes, he doesn't have other children. He has other children.
Well, that's the thing. The Ram said he did have other children. That's the point.
He could appoint one of those other sons to give it to his nephew.
If he wants to do that, fine. He could conceivably do it that way. But let's say he's not doing that. So on those two grounds, Rav Ashi says you can't say that there should be a valid kinyan over here. Number one, you're arguing that with a Kenyan Surah, you don't necessarily have to return it, that you have to necessarily return it, and we still see it's a valid Kenyan. First of all, you don't necessarily have to return it. Even if you say you do necessarily have to return it, there's no Kenyan now when it's supposed to take effect, as opposed to with a Kenyan Surah, yes, you're returning it right away, but meanwhile, you also meant for the Kenyan to take effect right now. So therefore, for two reasons, this shouldn't work. In fact, the Ran points out that when Rav Ashi is saying over here that you could get away without returning the Sudr, as a matter of fact, actually, he says that in the end, even Rav Ashi himself is only saying that as a dichui, only like as a way of pushing off Rav Nachman's Svara, but in fact, Rav Ashi himself would agree that if you were to keep the Sudr, it wouldn't be a valid Kenyan Sudr. You would, in fact, be required to return the Sudr to the Rav, for example, and if not, then it's not a valid Kenyan Sudr. So even though Rav Ashi is saying in the Gemara over here that maybe you could get away without returning it, you could walk out of the Beis Din Shtibel holding the Garutel, and the Kenyan is still a Kenyan. In fact, the Ram says it's not like that. So the Gemara goes on. Omele Rava L'Rav Nachman. So now Rava asks Rav Nachman, you're telling me that it would be a valid Kenyan, even though it's only Kni Amanas L'Achnas, but what about the Matnas Beschoren to Kni Amanas L'Achnasu? What about this case of On Mishnah, Matnas Beschoren? The Kenyan was for the purpose of being Machnit to somebody else. I'm giving you the Suda so that you can invite my father to the party. The Loi Kokoni, and we said in the Mishnah that he's not Kainan. So then that means that a matana, where it's only in order to be matched to somebody else, is no good. So why are you telling me that in the case of a Kenyan Sudder, it works, and therefore that should work in the case of this father with a no good next son? So the Gemara says, Zimnin Omale, Rava asked this question to Rav Nachman at different times, and each time Rav Nachman gave a different answer. Zimnin Omale, sometimes Rav Nachman gave him the answer, because, like we said on Amar Aleph, the very fact that he made a Suda for his son's party, or as Rambam says more generally, any big Suda, demonstrates that he didn't mean it sincerely. So therefore, we can say that it wasn't a sincere, that it wasn't a full-fledged matana, as opposed to in our case over here, we could say that it was a full matana, because ultimately he does want, after all, he does want that his grandson, if he's a Talmid Chacham, should be able to get these nechasim. And in fact, the Ram says he would rather have that his son inherits from his father, which is the normal way of doing things, rather than have to go directly from the grandfather to the grandson. So therefore, we can say that he did mean sincerely that the son should be koneh, but only for the purpose of being makneh, as opposed to in our Mishnah, it's very clear that the whole purpose was to evade the net. So that was one answer Rav Nachman gave. Other times, Rav Nachman answered Rava that our Mishnah would be like Rav Eliezer, Yom Afilo Vitu also b'modahana. The same way as we said previously that Rav Eliezer would answer by modahana, even Vitu, even the kind of small little favors that one person normally does for another without thinking about it. As the kind of thing, for example, giving him a little extra when you're selling him something, or for example, allowing him to trespass in your chotzer or whatever. So those are the kind of things. What we said previously, Rabbi Eliezer says bitter also b'modrana. By the same token, over here, Rabbi Eliezer would say he's going to be machmer by nedor. So we see, in other words, that he's more machmer by nedorim more than dinim mominus. Well, by the same token, he's going to be more machmer by nedorim than dinim mominus, even though by dinim mominus such a kinyan would work, as in the case of the father with no good next son, he would say that it's not the case with Nedarim. Nedarim, Rabbi Eliezer would say, are more stringent, and that would lead us to the case of Matnas Beis Chorin. So that's another reason, in the sense of Nachman, to say that there's a difference between our Mishnah, which says that's not a Matana, and the case that we're dealing with over here, where I'm saying that it is a valid Matana. So the Gemara asks, Tnan. Now we learned in our Mishnah, Omer Chachamim Kol Matana She'ena She'im Mekdishatay Mekudesh She'ena Matana. We said in the Mishnah that the Chachamim said that any Matana, and the word Kol is always meant to add something. Where if you were, that you don't have that, if you Mekdish it should be Mekudesh She'ena Matana. We said such a thing is not considered a valid Matana. Kol Isur Yamai. What would Kol be coming to include? Lav Lasur Yaham Milsa Dishadia Bekitin. Wouldn't it include this case of the kidney, this case where the son was the whatever he was doing with bundles of flax or ornaments of flax or whatever, and it would include that case, even though in the case of the Mishnah we're talking about a neder, but the Mishnah would be including other cases, including this case of which is pure dinim mominus without nedarim involved. So in that case, then that would contradict Rav Nachman's second explanation that our Mishnah is a. That our Mishnah is only in a specific case of Nedarim, or in general, it would be a question on Rav Nachman, who says that it would work. Kniya Manas Mahakas would be Koina, and was saying our Mishnah would be a special case for Sudasa Mechachas Olav, or because of the point of Rav Eliezer, but the Mishnah is saying the word Kol, which would seem to include other cases as well. Now, the Ran's Gius is just Hom Milsa de Kipi. He takes out the word Shadia. So it means this matter of the Kipi, of the bundles or ornaments of flax that we said before. On the other hand, a number of the Rishonim over here, a number of the Purushim, have the words over here, have the word Shadia, or variants of it. The Mefarish has the word, not the Kipi, but the Shadia the Kfela. That it's thrown around using a double Lashon. Meaning, in other words, that he actually said, we're talking about the grandfather, actually made a double tnai, which is how you need something for it to be a valid tnai. He said, if my grandson ends up being a Talmid Chacham, then he should inherit this property, and if not, then not. So therefore, and still the Mishnah would be implying that even though he went that far, it's still not considered a valid kinyan. Another Gersa, the Rosh has a Gersa, the Shomit, not the Shadia, but the Shomit Kipi. This case of the person who is stealing these bundles of flax. Anyway, So whatever the lashon is, the kifi or the shadi b'kfela or the shomet b'kifi, either way, the point is, on the face of it, the Mishnah with the word kol is coming to include that case. So then that would be a contradiction of Nachman. And the answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say la'asuri lishna v'asra, the shmait d'rava. You could say the Mishnah with the word kol is coming to include the second lashon of what Rava said on Amar Aleph, where we said that even if he doesn't explicitly say, I'm giving you this in order that you should invite my father, he just says, I'm giving this to you and invite my father, where we could argue, and he said, according to Rava's first lashon, that would be okay. Nope, the Mishnah is implying that even that is no good. But it's still, we could say that the Mishnah is still limiting its din to cases of nedarim, not necessarily that it is addressing matters of dinim mamonis at all. Maybe a dinim mamonis, like Reb Nachman says, it would work.
That's why
he can't directly be mizaka to the baby right there. That's why he has to wait, and that's why he has to go through the son. But you also have the point that Ram says that anyway, he would like, if possible, that the nachla should go the normal way, from him to his son, and from his son to his son. So the Ram summarizes what the halacha is. As far as the sudr, like we said, you have to return the sudr. If you don't, then it's not a valid Kenyan sudr. And again, we said that even Rav Ashi, who's arguing against that over here, does in fact hold, and the Ram proves on the basis of a Gemara in Kiddushin that Rav Ashi would in fact agree as a matter of practical halacha with Rav Nachman. You have to return the sudr, otherwise it's not a valid Kenyan. As far as this actual din of Kniyam and Asmahaknas, there we have, the fact is, Rav Ashi is disagreeing with him, and therefore, the result would be that the halacha, so therefore, the Ram says, on the face of it, in this matter of the case of this no good Nick son, the halacha would end up being like Rav Ashi, that it's not a valid kin. On the other hand, he says, the Rambam paskin, like Rav Nachman, in both of them. So the Rambam paskins that yes, a Kenyan sudur you do have to return, otherwise not a valid Kenyan. And a case like this, where the father is saying that my son should be kona in order to be machna to his son, that would in fact work, and the grandson is eventually kona if he ends up being a family chacham. Hadron alacha shukin.
Fine line, how to.